Today's topic may not be suitable for younger viewers. Parental supervision is advised. It's been said that perfect health requires perfect circulation. That circulation includes 100,000 miles or 60,000 kilometres of blood vessels carrying blood to every corner, brain and body. But what happens when those vessels get clogged? Could it affect not just brain health, but also sexual health? Stand by. Go Healthy for Good starts right now. Hello and welcome to Go Healthy for Good. Spending the rest of your life with your childhood sweetheart is the stuff of dreams, or is it? Meet Debbie. Watch.
I met Donnie when I was very young. I was only 13. He rode horse and I had a horse, or my sister had a horse. So we kind of met like that because, of course, at 13, 14, you're not to see a boy. So I didn't really think about it. So I never really thought about getting in a relationship or even dating, because we weren't dating. We just seen each other once in a while. And so then my dad had passed away, so things were kind of, mom started working and going, and so we just started meeting, and one thing led to another, and he was older, and 3.5 years, and so, and he had a hard situation at his house that he wanted a baby, he wanted a wife, he wanted out. Baby's not the answer. They're sweet, they're lovable, but they cry. They poop in their pants. They wet. They have teething problems. They have colic. You know, they're there 24/7. I know of several that are pregnant at 12 and 13 years old that think their life's going to change. Well, it will change, but it's not going to be for their good. And so I guess that was his reasoning. I can always play the young and dumb, because I felt I really was. I didn't know. Mama told us the old saying, you know, just don't be around guys and stay away from the old man and don't let anybody touch you or anything. So I hadn't really, you know, thought about it. And so, of course, and so I started sneaking away. My mother did not know. Later, my sister knew. And so, but she didn't tell on me. I am at the age of 14 when I found out I was pregnant. And so school had just started in August. And so they knew I was pregnant. When the kids at school found out that I was pregnant, the teachers, you know, they didn't want me there because they didn't want that influence to be on the other kids at that age. If I would have been in high school, it might have been different, but in junior high, they wouldn't let me go to school. And so one of my friend's mother did try to, you know, be nice and give me a baby shower, you know, but no one came. The other mothers would not allow their children to be around me. So my life completely changed. Donnie and I got married. We had to have a special license because he had just turned 18 in November. We got married in January of the following year. And so we had a special judge sign a paper that we could get married. And by the time I had Denise, I had just turned 15. We stayed with my mom until Denise was born. I put her in a drawer, you know, and very proud of her, but that was just a really tough situation. As you become a mother and as you get older, you realize what I did to my mother. I can't even begin to know what I put her through.
On today's show, our guest is one of the amazing Esselstyns. We'll look at the pros and cons of coconut oil, learn more exercise moves with Sean, and see what happens to Debbie and Donnie. So let's get started with the news. In the headlines today, is the HPV vaccine effective, get pregnant faster with nuts and olives, and exercise capacity in ED. Human papillomavirus, or HPV, is the most common sexually transmitted infection in America. About 1 in 4 Americans are currently infected, and there are 14 million new cases every year, mostly amongst young people in their late teens and early 20s. HPV is so common that almost every sexually active person will get it at some time. Certain subtypes of HPV cause warts, others trigger precancer and cancer of the genital tract, which is why the new HPV vaccine was developed. But is it effective? Researchers recently combined the findings of 26 studies involving 73,000 women to measure the reduction of precancer of the cervix. For women vaccinated between 15 and 26 years of age, it prevented 60% of precancers, making cervix cancer much less likely. Women aged 25 to 45 at vaccination were less likely to receive protection, possibly because they were already infected when they were vaccinated. So get vaccinated young, have regular pap smears, use condoms, and be in a mutually monogamous relationship to prevent cervix cancer. Trying to get pregnant? The type of fats you eat may make a difference, according to a new study. It's known that fat metabolism is important for reproduction. So researchers studied 1,200 women who had lost one or two private pregnancies and were now trying to get pregnant again. The level of the various fats in their bloodstream were measured. Those with higher levels of monounsaturated fat conceived quickly. Higher levels of polyunsaturated fats took longer. These findings only held true in normal or underweight women. Saturated fats, trans fats, omega-3 fats and omega-6 fats made no difference. So if you're trying to get pregnant, choose healthy fats from nuts, olives and avocados rather than vegetable oil or animal fat. Erectile dysfunction, or ED, is a risk factor for heart disease, but higher levels of fitness improve the prognosis. The Henry Ford Exercise Testing Project assessed fitness in 70,000 people to investigate the long-term effects of exercise on health events. Researchers identified 1,100 men in the study who were taking medication for ED, which is known to precede cardiovascular events like heart attacks and strokes by 3 to 5 years. The men were followed for an average of 9 years. Those with the greatest exercise capacity had lower rates of death, major cardiovascular events, and were less likely to get diabetes than those who were the least fit. Researchers found this held true despite multiple cardiac risk factors like high blood pressure, high cholesterol, obesity, a history of smoking, and a family history of heart disease. So men, if you have ED, maintain your exercise capacity. I'm Dr. Nerida McKibben, and that's today's health news. Today's guest is Jane Esselstyn. Her father, Dr. Caldwell Esselstyn, was one of the pioneers of reversing cardiovascular disease through a plant-based diet. Jane is a registered nurse and teaches sex education to middle school adolescents. She also works with her parents and brother to advocate, educate, and motivate people to avoid blood vessel disease. Here she explains the cause and consequence.
The standard American diet is not doing much healthy stuff to our vessels. The standard American diet, to use a phrase that my father often uses, is just it makes the lining of the vessels sticky. You can imagine almost like if a layer of Crisco or, you know, just shortening, or I don't know what terms you use in New Zealand for like a shortening, there's a stick. It's like sunscreen. It's like melted chapstick, just lining the innermost lining of our vessels where our blood is supposed to flow just without any friction.
It should be like stainless steel.
Yes, like a Teflon, just a clear tube. Mm-hmm. I mean, Mother Nature gave us these clear tubes through our vessels, and to have it then get coated with this sticky, just layer of, like, for lack of better words, sort of sunscreeny, plaquey buildup, is really a burden to the arteries. And the ability to release nitric oxide from the innermost lining, the endothelial lining of the vessels, is essential. And it helps our vessels dilate. It helps them keep all the elements flowing through the blood. So if the endothelial cells, the cells lining the vessels, are not healthy, there goes arterial health, just goes sort of down the tubes, to say. Getting off the greasy, meaty, cheesy, standard American diet and starting a diet that's more focused on plant-based foods, you know, grains, greens, beans, berries, just not greasy, meaty, cheesy, eggy stuff, cleans it out. It just sort of, it gives it a chance to clear itself off. It removes, for lack of a better word, some of that sunscreen, that plaquey buildup, that atherosclerotic plaque. It clears it out.
How long does that take?
There are innumerable variables. How often is one eating a little bit of grease, a little bit of meat, a little bit of cheese? Or are they eating all whole food plant-based? Because in all whole food plant-based diet, just, you know, really keeping it clean every day, every meal, every bite, they really have a great chance of turning it around soon. And again, that sounds like a vague number because everyone is different. The amount of disease they have is different. How really clean they are is different. But people, we see success with some people with their blood pressure at least in just days. Cholesterol, we see changes happen within a week. Nothing's cleared out and gone, but it's you can measure. It's measurable. The decline. I mean, and when in cardiac numbers, everything you want to pretty much go down. And it's just really exciting how we see that happen just, I mean, I can't say immediate, but it feels so immediate when you're with these people who are just wanting to get healthy, wanting to get better, and to see it happen, it's great.
And seeing is believing. More from Jane in the next segment, but first this.
Hey, let's have a big party this weekend.
You won't have time or energy to organize that.
Yes, I will. I'm full of energy. I feel great. I'll text people right now.
No, think about it first.
No, 200 people invited. There.
Oh no, 200? I think that's the energy drink talking.
Oh, I feel terrible. Why did I invite 200 people to that dumb party?
I don't know, but I think the caffeine just wore off.
Oh, you're right. I just need some more caffeine. I'm out of energy drink. I'll go get some coffee. Oh, I feel so much better now. I've ordered now 3 bouncy castles for that party for the children this weekend.
Oh, great. But you're a drug addict.
No, I'm not. I don't take drugs.
Yes, you do. You get jittery, sleepy, and headachey if you don't have a coffee or energy drink in your hand.
So?
Well, those are all symptoms of drug addiction. Caffeine is actually classed as the world's most popular drug.
Really?
Uh-huh. So lead a steady life by avoiding social drug addiction. Doctor's orders. Coconut oil contains more saturated fat than animal fat. Now, one argument to say that it's healthier is that people say, oh, but it has medium chain saturated fatty acids rather than the long chain that we see in animal products. But yes, there are some, but it's only 15%. And the other 85% of them are long chain, just like we find in these animal products. So how did coconut oil become a superfood? Well, in the early 1900s, we were using butter and lard in cooking, frying and baking. They tasted good. They had a nice texture. They gave baking that crispiness. They withstood high heat. But at the same time, all that saturated fat was having a negative impact on the health of our nation. And in the 1960s, the dots were connected between diet and health. And dietary guidelines came out advising the replacement of these saturated fats with polyunsaturated fats. But there's clearly a problem. These are solid at room temperature, and these are liquid. They're pouring oils. They have a lower smoke point. They're less stable. They oxidize or go rancid more quickly. And people were turning away from butter and lard, but didn't have an alternative. The food industry quickly found a way to solidify vegetable oils, and they called it margarine. They changed the molecular structure, they hydrogenated, and these adulterated polyunsaturated fats were now more harmful than saturated fat, though we didn't realize it at the time. Somehow we interpreted the move away from saturated fats, which were bad,
to be healthy. And so we suddenly increased the consumption of all the fat that we were eating. We jumped out of the frying pan into the deep fryer. It would have been better just to have reduced fat intake. Instead of fried eggs for breakfast, have some oatmeal. Instead of deep frying things, steam them. Instead of cheese, cottage cheese. However, it was right at the time when convenience foods were booming. We were handing off the labor of sweating over our hot kitchen stoves to the commercial food industry and let them do the cooking for us. And they had a field day. Most of the fat we were now eating was coming from these trans fats, these hydrogenated or partially hydrogenated oils. And then we discovered how harmful they really were. In the early 2000s, food activists began to call for a ban on trans fats. Well, we couldn't go back to the butter and lard. We couldn't go to liquids because, you know, they couldn't spread our bread. And woe be tied if we had to change anything that we always ate. I mean, that fat gives you that lovely, creamy texture and the feel of grease on the tongue, full, satisfied feeling in our tummies. But there was another option, and it was so easy to market. Plant-based, cholesterol-free, tropical oils had found their niche. Suddenly, we had palm oil, palm kernel oil, and coconut oil. A few leading food authors led the charge, saying coconut oil was a miracle food. You could eat fat and lose fat all at the same time. Everyone else jumped on the bandwagon. 101 benefits of coconut oil, they said. We'd been led astray all over again. We didn't learn our lesson. The negative health impacts of saturated fat had been long established. Ongoing research never showed anything different. And only a few studies, though, had been done specifically on coconut oil, and that's how it sneaked under the radar. Yet, the few studies there were all showed a rise in cholesterol when we increased coconut oil consumption. One study even showed that heart disease deaths were 3 times higher in Singapore, where there was a high coconut and palm oil consumption, compared to Hong Kong. Now, coconut products have now proliferated because if you're messing with the coconuts, then you're going to get not just coconut oil, but you're going to get all these other products to make money from, like coconut water, coconut syrup, coconut sugar, coconut aminos, coconut milk. You name it, we have a coconut version of it to support that profitable industry. Though none of these products, well, some of them, but they don't have a lot of saturated fat like we do in the pure coconut oil. Today's show deals with sexual health, and the sensitive topic may not be suitable for younger audiences. Debbie and Donnie met when she was just 13. Within a year, she was pregnant and they were getting married. Watch.
First 2 months of Denise, I had my I breastfed. And so then when I got my appendix out, I just didn't think. And so then I was pregnant again. So when I turned 16, Don was born 7-8 days later on June 1st. And so by the time I was 16, I had both girls. And so the doctor was really concerned with my health and everything, that he was afraid I was just gonna keep having babies because I'd always had trouble taking medications and stuff. And so at that point, we had talked about different procedures of not getting pregnant. We had talked, Donnie and I, but he wanted more kids. And I didn't feel like that I could. But really, back 45 years ago, there wasn't a whole lot. I mean, there really wasn't no one talking to me to say, well, you can get a diaphragm, or you can do this, or you can take the pills, or you can, you know, even the condoms and stuff, there really wasn't a whole lot said. And so that was one of the reasons I felt like getting my tubes tied, because they talked like I could get them reversed. And so then when I went to do that, the doctor that had done my surgery, he had messed me up, and so I had a lot of scar tissue and everything in there. And so that's the reason the doctor said there was just no way I could get that reversed, and that I would have to have have a hysterectomy, and he was going to leave one ovary in. And so that's the reason I ended up having, because I was in so much pain that he couldn't believe I comprehended that much pain. He said I should have had it done years ago. And so, but within a year, I had to have the other ovary out. So by the time I was 23, I might have been 22, I'd had the complete everything out then. So that changed a lot, because I was only 22 and just had the two girls. I'm satisfied with the two girls, but to know that I couldn't, and because it was the choices that I had made back years ago.
Choices that had such serious consequences for them both. When Dr. Caldwell Esselstyn and his wife began empowering his patients to reverse cardiovascular disease by switching to a vegan diet, two of their children joined them. And together, the Esselstyn clan worked tirelessly in advocating for a whole food, plant-based diet through entities such as Forks Over Knives, Engine 2, and Healthcare as Self-Care. Our guest today is Jane Esselstyn. She writes cookbooks and holds conferences, camps, and food workshops. Her brother, Rip Esselstyn, the firefighter, runs Engine 2 immersion programs that involve the whole family. I asked Jane what her role is in Engine 2 and how the program is organized.
Engine 2 immersion program is my brother's business.
Oh, it is. Okay.
And so the way they structure it is it's a week-long immersion.
What's yours, though?
Healthcare is Self-Care is my business.
Oh, I
can't
believe
that. And I just, that's, I mean, that's more just... You know, I write cookbooks, and
yes.
I have my own conferences and camps and workshops and stuff that are really food-based. But Engine...
But do you go to Engine 2? Because you were talking about it on
right,
stage.
Engine 2. Yeah, oh, of course. I work at those immersions.
I thought so.
I bring the dancing. I bring the joy. You know, I try to optimize people's brains to do more than what they're used to, is sitting there and taking notes and worrying about their health. We put on the music. We dance. We walk around. They feel invigorated and excited, and they can't wait for the next song. Because I can't wait for the next song. But it's Engine 2 immersions. I think you're asking about what we do like before they arrive, or when they arrive, we take their biometrics. And at the end of the 7 days, we take it again. And this extraordinary change happens in just a week because they're eating our food for that week. So we kind of have them in jail, we say, jokingly, because they're eating our food and listening to lectures and doing a little bit of activity. It's voluntary. You don't have to go to yoga, and it's very light yoga. But yoga, you know, you can do it, you know, if you're experienced, you can do it more intensely. And I do a morning walk every day, and you can walk with me the full 30 minutes out, 30 minutes back, or you can go as far as you want and then head back. Or there was a little more of a, like a fitness class we also offer. And it's really, so it's a little bit of exercise, a lot of sitting down time, and plant-based food. But in that week, we see mountains move.
Have you got a success story you want to share?
Every single one of them. I mean, if it's somebody who wants to lose weight at the end of the immersions, and we go from like meal to sitting down for a couple lectures to another meal, and they're like, oh, I'm not hungry yet. So they eat and eat and eat and eat and eat and eat all week long. And at the end of the week, they're like, there's no way I've lost weight. And they get on the scale. And I think in the course of, we've been doing them since 2010, and a number of them a year. So in the course of 20, 30, however many, 40, I don't know how many we've done. Sorry, Rip, I don't know how many we've done. I think three people have gained a pound. But you're eating mostly water and fiber, and a ton of it. And everything just moves on through, as we know. But if someone wants to lose weight, they usually have success with that, especially knowing that they haven't starved all week. They've been, if anything, had an abundance of food. And if someone's looking for a change in their blood sugar because they're, you know, a metabolic syndrome or pre-diabetic, which is not really a diagnosis, but they've been told that, or if they've got type 2 diabetes or even type 1 and they're trying to manage it better as they age, the sugar levels, the regulation of all that just gets so normalized off the bat. These things start to normalize. And to the point where our doctors keep their eye on all the people who arrive, you know, flagged for those sorts of issues.
In case their blood pressure goes too low on their medication.
Exactly, because so we want them to take a tumble. Yeah.
Yeah, so in 1 week, they're coming off their medication or reducing their medication.
With the doctor following along. We don't want anyone to come on there and be like, hey, I'm here. There's my medication. Let's go. No, you keep taking your Synthroid, you keep taking your blood pressure meds until we ratchet them down slowly and while we're monitoring you. But by day three, people are monitored down sometimes to the point where they have to get off their meds.
Do you do blood? Do you look for biomarkers in that immersion week?
Oh, yeah. Before they arrive, we take their blood, and at the end, we take it again. So we're measuring, you know, looking at the cholesterols and triglycerides and... and we take their blood pressure on site so they can get an immediate result there. And we do their weight so they can get that result. They have to wait for the other ones for the blood test.
And within a week, do you expect to see a change in cholesterol, triglycerides, glucose?
Oh, yeah. It's great. It's
long term, do these people continue on this path? And how do they, so say someone comes with diabetes, they're on medications. By the end of the week, they're really cutting down. What happens to them after that? How do you engage them back in their primary care, with a primary care provider? Is that up to them to?
Completely.
Yeah.
My husband and I met working for Outward Bound, which is backpacking, hiking through the woods. Outward Bound has a big ceremony at the end of your Outward Bound course. And they give everyone this, it's a blue square called the Blue Peter, and it means that your ship is outward bound. So we always say, like, you come here and you have this course, this is an outward bound. When it ends, you are then outward bound, because your greatest challenges are going to come now. You've got this, you've been armed with this new information, this new can-do attitude, or whatever you've gotten from the course, an outward bound, or in my, I'm trying to use the metaphor of also using it at this immersion. Now off they go. What are you going to do with it? What are you going to do with all this new information and this new feeling of health and just energetic vitality, creativity? People are bursting with these words and hopes. I mean, they have tears the last day, just wanting to, say thank you, but also wanting to stay with it and keeping their community of friends going on the same path. So it's kind of up to them. I wish we could say, oh, we tell them, la-di-da, and they go, ah, la-di-da, and it's all done, but it's not.
Delicious is the bottom line, because we're not going to do something we don't enjoy, at least not in the long term. At the top of the show, we noted heart health and sexual health are related. Having started with heart health, it's time to turn our attention to sexual health, and here's a good place to start. Have you ever wondered why the book Song of Solomon is in the Bible? The couple in this story are obviously besotted with each other, very much in love. And the descriptions are poetic, yet quite explicit. So why is this book in the Bible? It seems that God wanted to let us know that He approves of intimacy within marriage, that shame and guilt should not be part of a healthy, monogamous, committed marriage. The polygamy we see in the Old Testament was not part of God's plan. Several New Testament passages, along with creation, make it clear that marriage involves one man and one woman. And Jesus taught that to lust after a woman other than your spouse is equivalent to committing adultery. And God included that in the Ten Commandments. The relationship between a husband and wife is akin to the relationship between Christ and His church. It's a sacred covenant that we need to protect. If aches and pains hold you back from being active, you might be interested to know that exercise is an important way to reverse inflammation. So what wonderful anti-inflammatories have you got in store for us today, Sean?
Well, it's interesting. It's like an oxymoron. You said we don't want to inflame, but boxing is what we're going to do today, which it ends up putting some inflammation on people sometimes. All right, so we're going to do a boxing workout today. It's very cardio intensive, but at the same time, I'm going to show you ways that you can use dumbbells, you can use a can of beans, you can use whatever you choose, but you really got to work for these 30 to 45 seconds, okay? Let's get started. We're going to kind of simulate what we're doing, some of the moves in some of our dynamic warm-up exercises, okay? So let's think about rotating, punching, rotating our palms facing down, and breathing. All right, get yourself into like this shadow boxing mindset, okay?
All right.
Where you're dodging, you're going left and right. Think of there's something in front of you and you have to get underneath it, okay? So do that for about 30 seconds. What you'll find out is that you're actually using your core to go under and come up, stretching your oblique, all right? Same thing that boxers do when they do their drills, when they're fighting, and so on and so forth,
right? Oh, thing, we know where you've been, huh?
Hey. So we're going to use some 5-pound dumbbells today to simulate and challenge ourselves for this cardio workout, okay? First exercise, like we did in the dynamic warm-up, is punches, all right? Jabs. Allowing yourself to use your shoulders, rotate with your core. Every time that weight comes forward, your core is challenged, all right? Mm. You're putting the weight further out. Your body now has to stabilize, all right? What you may find out after about 20 to 25 seconds, the punches start to go down a bit. So make sure that you stick with 30 seconds of hard work. 30 seconds of work. It's possible, all right?
Okay.
At the end of the 30 seconds, take a deep breath, shake it out, all right? If you don't shake it out, exercise number two will force you to shake it out, all right? So these are uppercuts. You see boxers doing it where they're uppercutting, right? Same thing, you have this 5-pound dumbbell or can of beans, the same thing. Punching up and down, all right? Now pick up the pace, go for it. 30 seconds, boom, boom, boom. Now, in this workout today, I'm gonna challenge you. I want you to do each exercise for 15 seconds, take a rest, then each exercise for 30 seconds, take a rest, and then each exercise, 45 seconds. And if you are feeling amazing, go for a minute of each.
Oh my.
Yes, it is challenging, all right? In three, two, and one. Exercise number three is your jumping jack, all right?
Okay.
These jacks, we're not gonna use a dumbbell. All right, we're gonna stop right about here, parallel to the ground, all right? These are called your jumping jacks, all right? But not your typical where you have your hands go above your head.
Okay.
These are a little bit different, working more of your shoulder, the muscles we use for boxing, okay? So
all
three,
right.
Two, and one, keep it going, yes. Perfect. Now, when I say challenge yourself, you can do this in a variety of ways. You can get lower, right? Yes, you can get higher and go faster. You can challenge it, you can do whatever you choose, but you know your output, right? You know what you can do, right? So challenge yourself here in three, two, and one. Three exercises, all right? You have your jabs, 15 seconds, all right? You have your uppercuts, 15 seconds. You have your jumping jack, 15 seconds. Walk it off, pretend like there's bells ringing, have fun with it, and then 30 seconds of each, rest.
Right.
And then 45 seconds of each, rest, and if you're feeling amazing, 1 minute of each. It's a quick workout, but it will challenge you and you feel amazing.
Yeah,
all right?
You're right.
So let's go through this, all right?
Okay.
In terms of stretching properly, feet nice and wide, roll your shoulders back, hands all the way down, and breathe. Get the blood circulating to our fingertips. Let's go over to the right-hand side, wrap your hands around your right ankle, bring your chest to your knee, and this is stretching your hamstring. In three, two, one, get the opposite side. Three, two, one, back to the middle. Come up nice and easy, roll those shoulders back. Bring your shoulders to your ear all the way up and come down. As you come down, exhale. Get rid of that tension, all right? Couple stretches, get your body nice and relaxed after a nice cardio intensive workout. You feel amazing.
Yeah, you do. Thanks, Sean.
You're very welcome.
Our cells love antioxidants. Antioxidants protect our cells against damage. An excellent source of antioxidants are fruits and vegetables. Fruits and veggies are high in vitamins A, C, and E, all great antioxidants. A 2011 Korean study found that vegetarians consumed approximately 2 times more antioxidant vitamins than their meat-eating counterparts. An antioxidant-rich vegetarian diet is another ageless advantage.
Now it's time for your questions. Here's the first one. Will Pilates help pelvic organ prolapse? Pelvic organ prolapse is a condition where the pelvic organs drop from their normal position. And that's caused usually by injury to either the nerves, the muscles, or the tissues of the pelvic floor, or all of them. And the pelvic floor is like a muscular sling at the bottom of the body that supports all of our organs. Now, the damage most often occurs during pregnancy or childbirth. So even a cesarean section doesn't prevent this from happening. But Pilates is one way of strengthening those muscles. It's great for strengthening the core. It can include the pelvic floor. So yes, that is one way. But there are physical therapists that actually specialize in pelvic floor exercises. And they have great tools and advice on how to do that. But all of that should help with pelvic organ prolapse. Now, Edith asks, is there any solution for azoospermia? Well, azoospermia is a condition where there is an absence of sperm. Now, that happens occasionally, probably to 1% of men. It can be genetic, can be the result of an infection in the reproductive tract, can be following having mumps as a child, a groin injury, like you're out playing ball and there's a strike to the testes. It can also happen after chemotherapy, which will really cause significant damage to the testes often. Now, in about 40% of cases, it's due to a blockage in the tube that normally would deliver sperm from the testis, and about 40% of men have that type of azoospermia. Surgery can help to clear the blockage, but either way, fertility treatment can be very helpful in this condition, where you sort of bypass, they take a biopsy of the testes and to check this out, they get sperm at the same time, and then that can be used for in vitro fertilization. Next question. This was an email. Does having periods past the age of 55 increase the risk of breast cancer, and what should I do about it? Well, an increased exposure to estrogen increases the risk of breast cancer. So, starting periods young, finishing late, increases your exposure to estrogen because that's what your ovaries are doing that during that time. But also having extra weight, because fat cells don't just sit there, they're like little estrogen factories. And so they're exposing you to extra estrogen as well. So there are a number of different ways this can happen. The fact that you're still having periods means your ovaries worked longer than the average woman, and they've been giving you estrogen for longer. And that can be a good thing for your bones, for your heart, for your memory, cognitive function, for your cholesterol. But we mentioned the downside, a slight increase in breast cancer, also in uterine cancer. So celebrate the benefits and minimize the risks by ensuring that you have a normal weight so there's not that extra fat producing extra estrogen. Keep up to date with your mammograms and have a good exercise program. They're all very effective at breast cancer prevention. Now, if you want to send in your question, you can do that by email, calling, texting, or by going on our Facebook page. And we love to have more Facebook viewers because I can feed you little health tips during the week and you can see videos. So get in touch with us. Now, let's head down to the store. In 1543, Spanish explorers found sweet potatoes growing in cultivated gardens in what became Louisiana. Essential food in all the colonies. There were no refrigerators, but this was a crop that could be stored right through the winter. In the Depression in the 1920s, 31 pounds of sweet potato was consumed by each person in America, and it became associated with poverty, so it lost its popularity, and now we only eat about 4 or 5 pounds per year. Although it's sweet, it's a good choice for diabetes because it can stabilize blood glucose. Bake it or boil it and puree it. One serving is equivalent to a cup cubed, and that contains only 175 calories. So take some home today. Don't refrigerate it because it can become bitter. Just store it in a cool, dry place. Bon appetit. Today's show deals with sexual health, and the sensitive topic may not be suitable for younger audiences. In the last segment, we were talking about how the Esselstyns start people on a new health trajectory through immersion programs. I asked today's guest, Jane Esselstyn, how they help people to continue on that path.
Well, it's relevant for anybody who is interested in all parts of who we are, because we're all feeling beings, we're academic beings, we're athletic beings, we're creative beings, we're expressive beings, we're sexual beings. We're designed that way. We are all sexual beings. And if we deny that, you can get in trouble. So I know just as a middle school sex ed teacher, I do that a very little bit. Like I don't do health class, I just do the sex ed portion. It's wonderful to be able to talk to kids about this stuff. And I bring that same message, and it's really packaged in the similar middle school package when I speak to adults. And whenever I speak to, about it at either my conferences and events or wherever I'm invited to go, I say I will talk about the benefits of plant-based eating above and below the belt. And I'm a little more comfortable below the belt talking about this stuff. It's because it's really, it's exciting for people, and everyone sort of perks up and they want to listen, even though they might think, oh, this is too much, this isn't, but they're still kind of listening because it's relevant to all of our lives. Right. Whether we're 13 or you know, 113. And with whole food plant-based eating, as we've talked about earlier, so many things normalize. And in the case of men sometimes, when they are on a standard American diet, and they're eating, you know, again, just to use my phrase, a greasy, meaty, cheesy diet, and they're coating all their arteries with this plaquey buildup, the essential nitric oxide, which is a gas, it's released by the endothelial cells that makes the arteries dilate, that gets compromised. Not just in their heart muscle, and they know angina, which is the lack of oxygen getting to your heart, and it's not, you know, intermittent claudication like of blood into your leg. Sometimes it shows up as erectile dysfunction, or ED. So ED can be caused by a number of different things, you know, psychological, physiological, cultural. You know, the use of internet pornography can sometimes desensitize people in ways that they did not mean to when they started this habit, but it gets out of control. So if it's not those issues, it can be a vascular issue, which is so exciting in a way, ha ha ha, because going on a whole food plant-based diet, this buildup, as we talked about earlier, this buildup does sort of get scrubbed away little by little. And, you know, again, I can't tell you the amount of time it would take, but men do see change in their character of their erections when they go on a whole food plant-based diet from when things started to not, when things started to go south, as they say, and not be able to go north.
And what about for women?
And women, I'm so glad you asked, because I feel like it's, this world is 50-50, nifty-nifty, balanced, and we have to sometimes put ourselves on that
we
scale.
We absolutely have to.
Women, women obviously are physiologically a little different, but we all have said the same tissue that we are made of in the down there, for lack of a better word. And the tissue in males that gets engorged with blood during arousal, for women, that is called the internal clitoris, if you will, and that does not engorge externally when she's aroused and blood's flowing. It's an internal arousal, and that's the crura, which is it's up inside her body, above her pelvic floor, and it goes. The crura are these two like arms, but they come up like almost like rabbit ears, and they wrap around the vaginal space. And when the blood flow is happening in there, that helps with lubrication, because lubrication for a woman is the equal and opposite of what an erection is for a male. And with her increased lubrication, which comes from blood flow, which is made of plasma and lady chemicals, as I say, that is when this whole beautiful way we're designed to behave can show up. And it's just it's a difficult situation when it doesn't work for somebody. And that imbalance is, it's rough to navigate for lots of people, even the loving couple.
Yes, it is. So yeah. It's not just physically, it affects their relationship, their emotions,
everything.
their psychology
everything.
And everything, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And so this is actually a really important subject, and I'm glad you're willing to talk about it.
Because so how we all got here.
Well, that's a good point. It is.
Yeah.
It is, yes.
And it's the most relevant thing to kids, for them to learn about it. Just like, this is how you work, and this is why you want to do this, and careful, and be aware.
Yes. And I think when we can say, oh, we don't want to get diabetes, and we don't want to get hypertension, and we don't want to get whatever it is, but when you say you want to have a fulfilling, healthy, happy marriage that is sexually fulfilling, that
right. I always tell people, like, don't you want to have a positive, healthy sex life in your relationship? Like, who wants to have a negative, shadowy, disease-ridden, non-communicative relationship? You don't want that for anybody.
No.
No one.
No, that's right.
Yeah.
And so you get people responding as they've gone through an immersion?
I can't share the emails I receive from people sometimes, yeah.
Really? Because you've brought up the subject. They now have permission to share
Well,
that.
They're almost thankful to have somebody who's talking about what they, you know, are secretly thinking about. And
they come back and they say things are different.
And well, some people definitely do. Some people just, things are different, and off they go. They don't need to talk to anybody anymore.
Mm.
So,
but it definitely, a whole food plant-based diet, definitely the evidence is there.
It
can help.
Well, but women in menopause, things do have there's a different, the vagina can go through all kinds of changes, and the character of it can be dry and a different sort of pain with intercourse, which is a different, addressing that.
Different
it's a whole
entity,
different
yes.
appointment.
Right.
And you can, you know, think it's worth trying all kinds of stuff, but that's a different show.
Okay. Now, you mentioned there were some other reasons for erectile dysfunction. You mentioned pornography. How does that interfere with erectile dysfunction? Or how does that cause erectile dysfunction?
What seems to be happening is that this, obviously the internet's come to be, and pornography is a huge part of what goes on the internet all day long with, I mean, there's all kinds of statistics that change daily. I don't even want to try to quote one because, I mean, someone said it was bigger than the, one time they said it, the internet pornography use was bigger than the NFL, NBA, NHL, all the sports, NBA, yes. NHL, all the
yes.
combined.
Wow.
Per day. And I'm like, who's monitoring that? Or who's not monitoring something? But, so it happens sort of to lots of groups, but again, kind of like video games, more with males than females. Females by no means are not using pornography, but
right.
Young males who are curious, you know, they want to know, like, you know, what is sex? And then, boom, what do they see? And people say, well, then put filters on the phones. And I say, no, talk to your kids from when they're young about what's what, and then they're clear, and you're their resource, not Google. YouTube, or you know, there's all kinds of stuff, images they could get a hold of. So young kids start around, you know, puberty, curiosity age, and so then by the time that they're in college, what seems to happen for kids who have maintained an interest in pornography and had that porn habit get more and more extreme, or be what they go to, you know, that's what gets them over the hedge. It's really hard for them to go then to a real person who's a beautiful, willing, curious, interested partner when they actually have been so wired in their brain from a young age for this stimulus to send them over the hedge. For that to be what they can really, that's what they get the peak of pleasure, and not with their partner or even arousal with their partner. So that's a category that's kind of a troublesome to hear about, young healthy males experiencing ED because of pornography. The other group of influence, if you will, is older men who grew up, you know, having to, I always joke around, digging up the Playboy magazines from, you know, the swing to the left of the tree or whatever, that their friends left there for them to, you know, hey, dude, it's under there.
Yes.
Then they had to look at these still pictures, and they had to create their own fantasy. And they had to use their own mind, which is what is sort of involved when you are with a willing partner, is that you're working on your own creativity and dance. And so that those guys, those males are wired pretty hardcore. Okay, but when they get to using pornography, it changes things sort of in the immediate, and their partner seems to be less interesting sometimes. Or they ask their partner to do certain things with them, which is a new introduction of what do you want me to do and why? And anyway, sometimes when those guys try to get off the pornography, they come back really quickly, no problem. The younger guys, it takes them a longer time to get back to their authentic
reality.
Selves and reality. And I keep saying creativity with their sexual beings. It's just a, you know, it's what it is.
It is. It's an expression of creativity. More on sexual health from Jane in the next segment. Don't go away. Debbie was 14 and Donnie was 18 when they were married by a special court injunction. Their first child was born a few months later and a second 12 months after that. Complications from a ruptured appendix between those pregnancies resulted in the loss of Debbie's uterus and both ovaries by the age of 22. Now in her 50s, she reflects on life. Watch.
I had no idea at 14. I had no idea at 16 what love was. But one of the things I can tell you, my grandmother told me, she had a situation where she was not allowed to marry the guy she loved. He went to service. To make a long story short, he was told a lie that she had someone else. And so he married someone else, so she married my grandpa. And she told me, she said, you know, you may not love him now. And I said, oh, yes, I do. Because I knew in my heart I loved him. But I didn't. I didn't know what love was till you get older and really realize what love is. But she said, you will. She said, you don't now, but you will. She said, just take your time and always, you know, love him and he'll love you. So on the bright side of my life is having my two children and six beautiful grandchildren. They're the bright part of your life. And so I would never change that. I mean, I love them more than anything in the world. And so they're there for me, and as I am for them. So, you know, you love your kids, but when grandkids come in your life, it's even better. So I love my children and I love my grandchildren. So, you know, it was very hard and I don't recommend it to anybody, but you know, you make the best and God can always make something good come out of something that's not supposed to be. And I believe that completely because the kids, my grandkids are at the age they are. And so my youngest grand said, well, Grandma, you was only 14. Well, for a long time, they didn't know how old I was. And I wished it would have stayed that way. You know, and I said, yeah, Grandma done wrong. And Grandma didn't do right, but that don't mean you can. And so, I try to really instill in them, you know, what they should and shouldn't do. Don't look at Grandma for an example because Grandma was wrong. But through God's grace, you know, that's the only way I stayed in the marriage was through church and through family and prayer. And so, you know, that's hard this day and age for people to do, but the grandkids make it all worthwhile. And, you know, I have a wonderful husband and two beautiful children and two son-in-laws and six grandchildren. So I've been very blessed.
Faith, church, and prayer. Now that's a recipe for success right there. Today we're talking sexual health. So this show is not suitable for younger audiences. Our guest is Jane Esselstyn, a registered nurse who brings hilarity to the topic as she discusses sexual health in her health seminars and teaches sex education to middle schoolers. Here's why.
Well, I've been around these the plant-based, whole food plant-based conferences or, you know, disease reversal conferences for so long that when I first started attending them, my mom and I would come and we'd do the cooking demos. And then the men would get back on stage, and then we would go, oh, yeah, good cooking demo. And I thought, this is weird because I do research, and I'm a nurse, and I've got kids, and I do cookbooks, but we got a lot more to say than just how to cook an onion. So I was like, enough of the, like, white-haired white man on the stage. I know I'm talking about my dad here, but, like, I'm not trying to kick him off stage, but just it seemed like it was the white-haired white man show, and there's so many more voices and faces and to hear. So I just said, forget it. I've written the Prevent and Reverse Heart Disease cookbook and some other.
And you're great at that. I love your videos.
And oh yeah, we have our YouTube channel.
Yes.
That's all a lot of our recipes. But I just decided to have it for women. Prevent and Reverse Heart Disease for Women was my first conference. And then we've gone on, now we're on our fourth, fifth conference. I've added a comorbidity. So last year it was Prevent and Reverse Heart Disease and Autoimmune Disease for Women. And I had these beautiful speakers, Dr. Monica Agarwal, who has an amazing story to tell of her own autoimmune illness. And she, you know, being an MD, how she got herself basically from being immobile to doing triathlons. And Dr. Sarai Stanzik, I don't know if you know Sarai.
Yes.
Sarai is wonderful, and you know, her diagnosis of MS in her 20s and walking with two canes. Now she does marathons in her 50s.
Yes.
And just,
she's been on the show too.
Then there you go. And there's this different voices, different faces, different just women. And so I've had this conference, and this coming year, which is going to be March 9th, 2019, it's going to be Prevent and Reverse Heart Disease and Alzheimer's Disease for Women, because two-thirds of the people who suffer with Alzheimer's are women. 76% of people with autoimmune disease are women, and we are the ones who should be getting the research done with us, and it's often not the case. We're so busy taking care of people and providing, you know, caregiving or, you know, caretaking of other people, and we're busy just not always putting ourselves out there to be researched and figured out and helped. So this is my effort to say, hey, do it with food. Cheaper, easier, quicker, faster, healthier, all around.
More effective.
More effective.
More affordable.
I've had so many Alzheimer's care places want to have a booth at my conference? And I said, no, I want to put you out of business. I want to put broccoli in business, and you guys, no, no.
Well, good on you. I'm so excited to hear what
you're doing. We do cooking workshops. I do. We have a, because it's kind of the 2.0. Like, okay, we got the why. We need the how. Like, how do you do this? So we have a one-day seminar. Actually, we do it. Have you seen Forks Over Knives? Mm. The last scene of Forks Over Knives is filmed at this place called The Knob. It's our family, like just a little house. And we have this wrapping your head, heart, and hands around plant-based eating at The Knob. And there's just a really small, intimate day. There's just 24 people. And we cook from the day you arrive, you're eating and preparing things and cooking. And then we take you for a little walk. And we do a little talking so you can get hungry again, and then we prepare a bunch of all food. So it's just, and in the goodie bag, you get a big Tupperware because you have to take so much home. But it's just a hands-on, can-do, this is how you do it. And then, wow, it's so good. Because it is. It's delicious.
And we were created sexual beings by a loving creator. The divine plan was for intimacy within marriage, a gift designed for reproduction, relationship, and restoration. And as lifestyle change brings reversal of cardiovascular disease, lowering of blood pressure, blood sugar, cholesterol, so lifestyle change brings reversal of sexual dysfunction. That's all for me today. Thanks for joining us on Go Healthy for Good. I'll see you next time.